We're talking today with Mark Hodges from Plains Grains. Mark, let's talk a little bit about this 2017 hard red winter wheat crop. We've been finished for quite a while now here in the Southern Plains. I know we're quickly moving forward with a challenging crop this year, further north all the way into the Dakotas now and Montana. The Southern Plains, give me your kind of an overview of what you see from the samples that you pulled and then the talk, you know, the conversations you've had with the elevator operators. It was a year we knew it was going to be a tough year, and really, I guess most of that was proved out.
Well, in a lot of respects, from a quality standpoint, it's kind of a mirror image of last year. From a production standpoint, obviously, we had pretty good production on the acres that weren't abandoned, but we had a lot of acres of abandonment, which we don't completely have our arms wrapped around yet. From a quality standpoint, you know, the kernel characteristics, just like last year, are really good. The miller's going to really like the kernel characteristics and the kind of mill yields he's going to see. But on the other hand, the protein's low like it was last year. And, of course, starting 2 years ago from now, we really were set up for the perfect storm in a sense that those producers 2 years ago fertilized for an average crop last year, which would have been that crop. They ended up with a record crop in a lot of cases. If there was any nitrogen in their profile that was in the reserve category, it probably pulled it out. At that time, the price of wheat was $3.20. There wasn't a lot of incentive last fall for producers to put a lot more nitrogen down, and there hadn't been a lot of incentive up to harvest to put more nitrogen down for the crop. We ended up with grain field conditions, no stress at that point, and so there wasn't anything to really put protein in the kernels because there wasn't enough nitrogen or profile to start with, plus there wasn't any stress. So we ended up with another crop that was low protein. Now you add to that, right now the northern spring crop is in big trouble, and it doesn't look like a lot of that spring crop is going to be available for blending to get the protein up for the end user. So it'll be challenging. It'll be an interesting year. Probably not as much domestically as internationally, and we start looking at exports to customers. It'll be interesting.
I guess what the last opportunity we would normally have to put that nitrogen down is that top dressing just as we come at the end of January, February, that time period. And wheat prices were still in the tank at that point.
They were. And, of course, there's been a lot of talk this year about what can we do to boost protein. And, of course, there's been a lot of research done. We reviewed some of that a couple of weeks ago at a soil fertility meeting in Stillwater. You know, Dr. Westerman, back in the 70s, did some work with the best time to apply nitrogen to get a response for protein. And I think his research showed even back that far that at flowering, at the time that wheat's flowering, is probably the best time to do it. You can't put a lot down. You don't want to burn the leaves, obviously. But it would bump protein 0.5% to 0.75%. And there's been some work done putting it on like at boot stage, and I think the evidence is not as solid there about how much boost you get in protein. But you know, the university's looking at ways for producers to maximize their return on the protein side at this point.
I guess that's becoming more obvious as we get a little more sophisticated in how we work with these foreign customers, especially with the data that you're providing through the entire belt.
And that's true. And of course, the other side of that coin that we're working on is through, I'll put my other hat on here just a minute, with Oklahoma Genetics, Inc. You know, the wheat breeders are looking for ways to get that nitrogen use efficiency into the varieties that they release. And Brett Carver's doing an outstanding job of that. So you can look at the varieties he's released and look at the protein accumulation within those varieties year in, year out. And Dr. Marburger's also started doing, and within the variety trials, doing some protein testing and making that available. So there's some really good research going on from that standpoint and variety development to maximize that protein accumulation.
Now, for Oklahoma, I think the experts, the USDA folks, are coming, have really kind of settled in around that approximately 90 million bushel level, right?
That's right. And, of course, early on, I would have been comfortable and said that I was comfortable with 100 million bushels. Obviously, I don't think it's going to turn out to be that way. I hope it's 90 million. Of course, from my personal standpoint, it's still really hard to get your arms around that acres of abandonment and how much went into hay and how much went into cattle and those kinds of things. But, you know, from a wheat production standpoint, it's pretty hard to argue with producers when, again, at that time, when they had to make that decision, are you going to look at cattle where the cattle market was going up and not real bad, but going up, and wheat prices were at $3.20 a bushel. It's pretty hard to argue that you shouldn't run it through the cattle.
Right. Now, beyond just Oklahoma, the rest of the belt, especially Kansas northward, you got, kind of give me an overview of what you've seen.
Well, of course, Kansas had a lot of problems, ranging from a freeze that got them from north-central Kansas down into central Kansas. Then they had wheat streak mosaic. We had wheat streak mosaic on a widespread basis, but they had it even worse. I think there was a lot of yield reduction because of wheat streak mosaic. And then they had the snowstorm, the 15 inches when wheat was headed out in southwest Kansas, and it's a corridor there on the western side of Kansas. Now, a lot of that had 15 inches of snow and it laid the crop flat that was headed, it came back up and they still got a crop out of it. Now, obviously it wasn't the kind of crop they would have liked to have had, but there's several sides of that issue. Because of the snow and a related system, they probably got a lot better yields in western Kansas than they would have gotten had they not gotten that event. Mm-hmm. So, they took a hit on the snow side and the footprint of that, but it wasn't a total loss.
Right. I know further north, the story is really bad in the Dakotas, Montana. Drought has just really hit the crop very, very hard this year.
Drought and high heat at the wrong time. And, of course, that's what's affected, as I mentioned before, the spring side of the things, but also on what's left of the winter wheat crop, and there's not much of it left. Again, as you outlined, eastern Montana, western North Dakota, down into South Dakota, and especially western South Dakota, it's pretty bad.
Overall, this crop, as it relates back to those folks that you're producing your report for, those buyers domestically, but especially internationally.
That's right. And, of course, good news is that kernel characteristics are great. The mills are going to get good mill yield. The downside, again, is the end user, that its flour protein isn't going to be where they'd like to have it. And domestically, there's probably not going to be as big a struggle as there is internationally that would depend on us for supplying good quality wheat. Again, it's not that it's not possible. It's just going to be more of a challenge than it's been in the past.
So a functional crop, just not quite the quality.
Correct.